Welcome to the Product Podcast, brought to you by Product School. Here, you'll get fresh insight from the people at the very top of the tech companies who make the products we love. Remember, you can learn product management live online. Visit productschool.com to discover our new certificate path. There, you can also join the world's largest community of PMs and network with the leaders from these podcasts at our online events. There's something happening almost every day.
I'd love to introduce to our guest today. His name is Mariano. What's up, Mariano?
Hola, Carlos. ¿Cómo estás?
Good to hear from you. I'm good here in San Francisco. Where are you?
A little south of San Francisco in a town called Hillsborough.
All right. Well, I guess your product and your company has been experiencing hyper growth during this time. So why don't you tell us a little more about yourself first, and then we can dig a little bit deeper into Mural.
Sure. So the accent is not local from California. I'm from Argentina originally. I moved in 7 years ago. Before that, we were fortunate to have founded a video games company. The company was called Three Melons. And Three Melons created games for big firms first for advertising. And then we switched to build our own games. In particular, a soccer game called Bola, which in 2010, we had like 1 million people per day during the World Cup that Spain won, right? Congratulations.
Of course, thank you.
And 20 million per in that year. And we were fortunate to be acquired by a company called Playdem, was here in the Bay Area. And then a few months later, we got acquired by a company called Disney. So I got to work for Disney for a while after that. It was a fun adventure.
That's so cool. So, I mean, we have a lot of things in common, obviously beyond our love for products. And so tell me a little more about that moment where you decide to switch gears from working at Disney to starting Mural.
Sure. So I started Mural because I needed it for myself first, which back in 2011, I was trying to come up with a new game idea, a new game about emotions, about little characters that would dance. And I had like a 66 slide long deck where I just collected ideas, inspiration of what this could be. And I thought it would be cool to introduce things around, again, empathy, right? Like what people were tweeting, changing into a color so that in the game would change to a color and the game would change and would morph. So there was a lot of ideas, also observations on what people were curious about in the marketplace. But the reality is I had no clue what I was doing. I had like just stuff and was presenting this pre-idea, let's call it. I remember going forwards and backwards in our slides a lot, and people were a little bit confused. The other thing was that my intention when I was showing this work in progress was for people to contribute to it, right? Not to judge, but I was seeing that people were reacting and judging my very nascent idea, right? So I realized that the keynote or PowerPoint is designed to present and people just receive the information or they judge, right? A sales pitch, an investor pitch. So the mindset and the space didn't have the affordance that we had when we worked together shoulder to shoulder on a whiteboard. And that was the original insight that, to be honest with you, if I were to start over again, I mean, I wouldn't start over the same way, but it's still true at the core of what Mural is.
But it's so crazy because you were using a tool to show your idea, which was a video game, but then you realized that there was a lot of, there was a huge problem to be fixed with the way the tools were being used for this stuff. I guess you were using a PowerPoint or something like that?
PowerPoint or Keynote, I don't really remember. I'm getting old, you know, I turned 40 this year, so memories are starting to fade out. But whichever deck, right, it's not the point. It's whichever the tool, it's about the affordance of the medium. And the reality is that back in 2010, the tools available for us to go through a creative exercise, we did most of stuff intuitively, right? Product school did not exist. Design thinking was emerging. Agile, same situation. We're fortunate these days that, again, I'm telling you, new, younger entrepreneurs get the advantage of basically doing this in a more structured way and helping people understand you, because now people understand what a customer journey map is or a UX flow and so on. So that's what we realized when we were inside IDEO, the design firm. We were there in a startup in residence program in 2014, early 2014. And that's like, we came in with a very flexible canvas, right? The whiteboarding part of Mural, we call it the visual thinking canvas. What we quickly realized is that we need to do two things. One is was focus more on enterprise teams, because back then they were the ones that are working in a remote fashion, right? Distributed, maybe in offices, but offices all around the world. So they had that pain point of remote work that we could solve right away. And the other thing was around methodologies. These methodologies were starting to become more and more standard. Alexander Osterwalder popularizing the Visual Canvas. You know, the Luma Institute teaching a lot of people on design methods. You guys starting to teach other methods too, right? So we decided that people were not, or observed, people were not hiring Mural just to whiteboard. People were hiring Mural for two things. At a team level, do creative problem solving, right? Going through a workshop, going through a project with these visual templates. Now, at a company level, we're starting to see that there were cultural transformations, right? Product operations, people trying to get all of the product managers to get better. Design operations, get better. Sales enablement, learning and development in general. And that's something that we've been focused on ever since.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you here at Product School internally, our product team was the first user of visual collaboration tools such as Mural. But at some point, we had to involve other people when getting feedback about a blog article or a website page or whatever it was. And now we have people from the operations and finance team, you know, using this canvas. So I think it's pretty fascinating, like something that wasn't really a category. I mean, for me, I remember going through similar pain points using PowerPoints and Google Docs and screenshots to try to explain something that it should be easier in the first place. I should focus more on my content and not on the tool.
Exactly. So yeah, the things that we're seeing are twofold, right? So one is, there's an unbundling of office, right? That it's attached to use cases in particular, right? So it's not about presentations, it's about types of presentations. And we're seeing a lot of templates or tools focused on each of these. And the other thing that we're seeing, based on what you said about designers and then product and then finance, is that there's starting to become a culture that it's not like it's not just about commenting, it's also about co-creating, right? So like multidisciplinary teams working together, and some of course lead or facilitate if it's a product design matter, but then maybe the finance person is leading a project around, I don't know, improving the employee experience for expense reporting. And they're using the same tool to understand, again, from their own customer needs, internal stakeholders, how to make that experience simpler. So it's a combination of this methodology becoming standard on how people do change management. And the other thing is, we're more peer-to-peer collaborators and not so much like someone is the owner and the rest are just participants or commenters, right?
So in your experience building products across different continents, what are some of the myths and misconceptions that you've seen throughout your career?
Well, when I was preparing for this thing to give me in particular, Agustin Soleris, our head of product. So give me misconceptions in particular around product management, right? And he said that the first one is that the product manager has to come up with product ideas and solutions And he claimed that ideas come from anywhere. And the product manager's job is to identify ideas anywhere and facilitate sessions to get those into the mix. And then the other misconception is that he doesn't believe that product managers need to do project management. I mean, they can, but it's not that the product manager solves for all of your tasks.
Ditto. So, and for you as a CEO, obviously, we call ourselves product CEOs because we come from that background and we still have an influence over the vision of the product. Like, how much overlap do you think there is between a good product manager and a good CEO?
Mm-hmm. So, of course, a good product manager would understand customer needs, would think about the experience, not just the product, and have like clear KPIs that are hopefully very much attached to customer love and revenue, right? So in that regard, it's pretty similar. The only thing is, as a CEO, you spend much more time selling, much more time making sure that other parts of the company are also delivering another type of experience, right? The buying experience should be as important as the user experience, right? So there's a little more, you need to be zoomed out a little more than a product manager. But when it comes to the fundamentals, it's always about the customer experience. It's always around rallying people behind that vision and mission. And then of course, being super focus on metrics, quantitative and qualitative.
Mm-hmm. And I also love the concept of lifelong learning. I believe that as founders, CEOs, or product leaders, we are constantly challenging ourselves. And there are so many other challenges that we don't know yet and we'll have to figure out at some point. So I'm always curious to know, from your perspective, how do you learn? And what are some of the things that you are now interested in learning to continue growing as a leader?
So the most important part is about leadership, right? That you just mentioned. And not just my leadership, but the rest of the leaders in the company. Because in a way, as we grow as a company, misalignment can be lethal, right? So right now, I'm trying to work a lot of my time to be clear on expectations, introducing ideas from the rest, but spending a lot of time on the vision, on how we do things, and making sure that there's the minimum amount of gaps of understanding. And also putting together the framework for people to also be able to lead themselves and not just follow the leader. You know what I mean? So like we like OKRs because of that. Sometimes we are more outcome based on others because some quarters we know what we need to get done, right? But some other quarters are more exploratory. We're making sure that I also do that with the new cohorts of people that are joining the company over and over, because there's some disconnect right now. There's folks that have been listening to me for 9 years now, and then there's some that are like just getting started.
Sorry, Mariano, what is the scale of your company? You mentioned that there are cohorts of people joining. Just out of curiosity, how big are you guys?
So we are 220 people. And there's, of course, like an extended network around us of investors, partners, and for what it's worth, also some clients that are co-creating with us. So yeah, there's a lot of folks.
That's really awesome. And I remember when I was getting started, I was hearing concepts such as values, culture, vision. And I was like, well, I'm not sure if this is what we need. And now it's so crazy how critical it is and how much time we spend on making sure that we're on the same page and we are revisiting some of the things that maybe were true when we were smaller and maybe everyone in the same room and are completely different now that you are operating at a global scale. So from your perspective, you know that here in Silicon Valley, we have a lot of startups and accelerators say you have to do things that don't scale. But as a CEO, obviously you need to scale yourself. But at the same time, there are things that you still want to continue doing. And you briefly touch upon culture and making sure that you over communicate. So What are some of those specifics that, that you still want to keep for yourself because they're core to your values?
Yeah, well, I would have to insist on that, the culture of innovation, right? So, I mean, making sure that we sell properly, right? It's not something that I do, but I inspect, right? If I get, really annoyed when we go through like a customer discovery and we don't get into the true pains and fears of our customers, right? We need to start from the very beginning in our sales process, understanding that and connecting with them. So I try to inspect in things like that, or are we thinking big enough in the product? So I don't necessarily have to do anything in particular. There are some jobs that I have to do, like fundraising or the vision. But when it comes to my collaborations, I like to make sure that across the whole company, we have that culture of imagination, culture of innovation. And that is something that, yeah, that's the company, right?
Absolutely. So at what point do you delegate? I mean, this is something that I personally struggled with as the company grew. I was very passionate about, as you said, like interacting with customers and influencing the product. But you know, at some point, you also hire people who are going to be doing the actual sales or product management and other functions of the company. So where do you think is the right balance?
So when it comes to product in particular, yes, it's really hard for me not to solutionize, right? So say, oh, this would be a great idea, that would be a great idea, or look at how these other people are doing this and that. So I force myself into documenting those in Mural and putting together any ideas just for me to like, just like kind of like a meditation type exercise where it's just, okay, at least I'm putting them somewhere. And every once in a while, I like to do like a casual session with the designers and product managers and, hey, look, these are some things that I've been thinking about in the last quarter, right? But the reality is that I'm spending most of my time like making sure that, again, the vision is clear, the go, especially like bringing in that vision into the go-to-market part of the team, that like it's harder for them to grasp the product, right? And what we, the jobs to be done and so forth. And then, so I mean, I've been spending most of my time there. When it comes to actually working with product, the I'm very eager to go back into the kitchen a little more, right? Like I've been building my go-to-market organization. But in general, I'm very interested in, I come in and say, tell them, hey, I always ask the same question, like, what's the customer experience? What are they going through? So starting with the product problem side, right? And just like making sure they repeat, and we have alignment there. The reality, Carlos, is that we have like a 1 year, maybe two, roadmap that we have clarity on known knowns that we need to do, right? So I'm getting ready to prepare. So what's next? How do we either disrupt Mural, cannibalize Mural, complement Mural? Like that's what I'm doing right now. Well, not really. What I want to do as I wrap up some things on the go-to-market end. So yeah, a little bit of meditation, a little bit of patience, and also, I mean, preparing, like coaching the guys to focus on the problem and then preparing, which I don't really know how to do it because, I mean, it's going to be the first time that we have to think of the second product or whatever. But that's what's next. And I think that I'm going to be part of that for sure, intimately.
And that's so cool to hear. I totally resonate with you on the putting your ideas on a canvas or somewhere as a way to release yourself from, okay, I don't have to hold all of this information in my head and now I can collaborate with others. But at the same time, I can imagine like a lot of companies that weren't working remotely or they didn't have multiple offices and now they're stuck thinking, okay, we need to collaborate. There is no coffee machine where we can go and hang out and share stuff. So for those type of new companies who are forced to start working remotely, what do you think are some good practices to get the most out of a company like a product like Mural? I've seen incredible templates that look beautiful, but it can also be a little intimidating if you've never, you know, give up on a PowerPoint.
Yeah. So it's multiple things. So first of all, it's a mindset, right? So as a company working remotely, you need to understand that you need to make space and time for imagination work, for playtime. And ideally, guided imagination, guided playtime, because especially introverts need some of that prompt, right? I mean, it's really hard to speak to a screen. It's really hard to move yourself in a virtual environment, whichever canvas you choose. So leaving some space and permission to play around is something that we always tell to people. Actually, even in formal workshops where people know the templates or know the methodologies, we even encourage them to leave 5, 10, 15 minutes of an icebreaker, low stakes, just play. Right? Introduce yourself, aspirations, fears, what you did last weekend, whatever it is to get the creative juices going, the permission to break things and so forth. Right? Now,
sorry, go ahead.
When the other thing is on the templates, right? I truly believe, as I said before, that there's a few methodologies that are very important for every company. For example, one simple one is a customer journey map, right? Or if you want to get more sophisticated, a jobs to be done map. All those things help align on customer, right? Drive empathy, and also have the whole company being, I mean, again, serving customers from the marketing, sales, customer success, product, all the way through the life cycle. So I think that even though some of those templates might feel a little intimidating, there are bits and pieces of those that should help people pursue. Because as I said, people need, it's like, it's aspiring someone, here's a guitar, improvise jazz. Like, I probably won't be good at that. But if you give me the sheet music to do, cha, 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 well, you'll get better, but you need to like repeat easy stuff. And that's where the role of facilitator comes in, right? Someone that is more of a jazz musician that can help the rest of the folks level up. And that's why we talk a lot about how to do facilitation, in particular, how to do remote facilitation, which is double hard. It's hard to do it in person, even hard to do it remotely.
Yeah, let's double click on that. I remember when you introduced me to the concept of the facilitator, I wasn't sure how to get started. And I actually started trying. We brought in some people from the outside to help us facilitate certain exercises like user research and others. And in some cases, we also have someone from the team play that role. And it's game changing. Like the quality of the meetings, the outcomes of those meetings is a whole new level. So why don't you elaborate a little bit more on that? Like, what is the role of a facilitator and how do companies can benefit from it?
Sure. By the way, there's an ebook that we put together about the ultimate, the guide for facilitating remote work or something like that. It's called, if you go to mural.co/ebook, you can check it out. It's short and sweet and a lot of interesting ideas there. So facilitator, facilitation, right? So you mentioned play the role of, you said something like that, right? So we're seeing a lot of companies hiring facilitators that generally do a lot of project management too, because they realize of the power of them coming into meetings, workshops, and leveling up the conversation. When it comes to facilitation, you and I facilitate meetings all the time. You are doing a facilitation right now of a fireside chat, right? So all leaders facilitate certain meetings. The thing is, like, sometimes we do it poorly, sometimes we have a guide, sometimes we don't, right? But it's, I believe it's a core competency that we all need to learn for the future, right? So when it comes to things around that, it's like there's principles, right? So making sure that everybody is participating, time box and micro time box sometimes, leave some time for solo work and collaboration work. So asynchronous and synchronous work, even within the meeting, so that you give time for everybody to input their observations or ideas. Making sure that you leave space for divergence before you get into convergence. So there's definitely a lot of techniques. And of course, getting the energy up and up all the way from the meeting, right? I think that once you agree in the beginning that this meeting, the end goal of this meeting is to do X, and we're going to be doing these different steps, that's also very important for the facilitator to bring everybody and ask them to check in, right? This is not just casual. We are here, we're present, and we're all going to be able to help each other achieve the end goal of this workshop. It has to be super clear from the beginning. So a lot to practice there. And the reality is that you can only get better at that by doing two things. One is probably mimicking someone, right? Like copying how someone else does. So what she did was excellent, bringing folks that are good at that. And the other thing is practice, right? A lot of practice.
Absolutely. And I see Mural and this type of virtual canvases as a platform for people to join. But it's true that you cannot do absolutely everything on there. And at some point you do something, but you also have to take somewhere else. So what are some good tools or things that you can integrate with in order for other teams to get full advantage of the platform?
Sure. And the reply to that is it depends on the function or persona, and it depends on the use case, right? You mentioned finance and marketing before and product. So there's different use cases and different personas and this different system of records that they need to interface with, right? For example, one of the constituents that we help a lot are folks in pre-sales and sales, right? To do discovery, right? To do stakeholder mapping, to do a timeline towards a critical event so that there's a mutual agreement plan with your customer. Those guys generally are documenting everything in Salesforce or Dynamics or whatever SAP products, right? So then of course we have a lot of backlog grooming and user story mapping, that's Agile. And then there's Asana, Jira, Monday, whatever the team uses. There's of course a lot around templatizing methodologies, right? And making sure that everyone in the company has access to those. And some people use wikis like SharePoint or Confluence to make sure that those templates are available to everyone in the company. And then of course, the prototyping tools, right? So after you're done defining, if you're building a screen product, yeah, working on those somewhere else makes total sense. So there's a bunch, and we focus on horizontality, but we're starting to get deeper into each of those vertical and integrating into workflows, which is basically what you're doing.
So I want to wrap up this interview with a final question. I want to get your thoughts on the future. What do you think are the biggest opportunities for people building products?
Okay, so I have three. Okay, so one is sales. Product managers and designers need to get, and engineers need to get much better at sales. And sales as in, not as in sales, like as in pitching, as in discovery and then co-creating with a customer and then delivering the solution, right? But much better at sales. The other one is around experimentation at a desirability level in the feature level. So instead of saying this is a roadmap and we're building this feature, tease it in the product. See if people are doing more of that. I don't see enough of that. I see things like pre-launches, like Robinhood did a great pre-launch and things like that. But at a feature level, I'm not seeing that yet. And then the last thing, which is something that people ask me, if you were doing something else, what would you do? And this is actually an idea of a company that would be needed to have like a collaboration among a lot of product managers. So I throw it out there. If someone wants to do it, like an angel invest, which is in games, there's a lot around progressive UI, right? So the first level, you just use one button. Second level, two buttons. Third level, more buttons, right? So they disclose more weapons, more abilities in time and with experience. In product, we don't see that. In product, software as a service, there's a lot of like, here's the product, and here's walk me. And the thing that happens there is like, it doesn't understand who the customer is and their level of sophistication with software, right? And the other thing is, like, if I use this a lot, I get better, I practice. If I forget about a piece of software and I come back a year from now, there should be a regressive UI and showing only a few things. And it would be lovely if all products would use this, so that, you know, again, Carlos, you know, Carlos is not very good at zoomable interfaces. So we know that from an API, and we give him an amazing customer experience. And of course, privacy matters aside, we need to figure that out. But if Carlos opts in into this thing, imagine the personalization across all of SaaS apps. It would be super.
I love that analogy of gamifying the experience of the user, because it's not just the onboarding of the user and then good luck, and then I assume that you are good to go, and then you remember everything. So kind of keeping that in mind as the user plays with your tool, I think I really like how you exchange the idea of gamifying everything and keeping time for that to kind of bring more inspiration and ideas to life, and that you just come from the top, especially I think with visualization tools. It's almost like a bottom-up approach where a few people start using it, they get a free trial, and then suddenly bring others, and then people start loving it, and it gets to the top. But it comes with the buy-in. It's not that the top bought a very expensive license and threw it out there and said, now everyone is using this thing because it cost me a break.
And then, Carlos, with collaboration software, right? In the beginning, you mentioned like the users of the software and commenters. You said that, right? That's a way of segmenting the experience in a way. But the reality is that I think we can be a little more fluid on that. And in collaboration software, it's very important because not everybody comes with, especially our collaboration software, which is like super multidisciplinary. You may want to have the finance guy like look at the product like an Excel spreadsheet, right? And then so I've been thinking a lot about that. And I think there's gonna be something interesting in the future to help us all as a community.
Thank you for listening to the Product Podcast. If you like this episode, don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. For more product insights, head over to productschool.com.